point in the panel, you're all expected to pick up a chair and throw it at one of the panelists who says something you don't like. No, what that means basically is I'm going to be down amongst you guys looking for questions from you, the audience, to ask of our panelists. In the event that you cannot think of anything really wise or incredibly insightful to ask, I have a few questions that I can ask these guys. But I think it's fair to say that they would much rather you ask the questions than if I ask the questions, because if I ask the questions, I know, for example, that Bruce Snyder is going to be very, very afraid because he and I have done this panel thing before, and he always gets a little nervous when I start asking questions.
I'm not afraid of you, Ted.
What's that?
I'm not afraid of you, Ted.
Yes, you are. Admit it. One of the things that I do have to bear in mind, however, I do have to remind you, is that the panelists do reserve the right to take your question and turn it into a different question of an entirely different subject. In some cases, I may take a question and expand on it, or I may decide that we have spent enough time talking about the evils of entity beings and it's time to move on to another topic, and we need one more chair. Here we go. Okay. So just if for whatever reason I take your question and decide to run with it in an entirely different direction, please don't be offended. That's just standard panelist behavior. Okay? So before we get started, what I'd like to do, this does two things. I'd like to ask each of the panelists to introduce themselves so that you get a chance to know who these people are. And it gives you an opportunity to think about some incredibly deep, insightful questions to ask these guys so that I don't have to. So let's see. We'll start over here on the right with Jacek. Is that how you say your name, Jacek?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay. Grab a mic and give us in two sentences who you are and why you're important.
Hi, everybody. My name is Jacek Laskowski. I work for Apache Geronimo since its inception. I don't remember when it was.
It was a drunken night, and you suddenly became a committer, and you don't quite remember how that happened.
And in my free time, I work for IBM. So.
Is your boss here? Does he know this is how you spend your time?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes it's very funny. Sometimes it's not that funny. But, you know, it's my free time, so I can choose what I'm doing. And I decided to go this way. What else? Okie doke. That's
there you go.
That's everything.
That's it. We'll grill you more later.
Okay. All right, I'm Matt Hoekstrom. I started working on the Geronimo project about a year ago. I also worked for IBM. But I have to tell you a funny story. Jacek joined IBM without any of us that were working on the project knowing it. We just found out one day. He started sending us same-time messages or instant messages. I actually work on Geronimo full-time, and I kind of specialize in the performance realm within Geronimo.
I'm Aaron Mulder, and I don't work for IBM. I work mostly on the console and deployment tools and plug-in system for Geronimo.
My name is Bruce Snyder. I am also one of the founders of Geronimo. I do not work for IBM. I work for a little company out of Los Angeles, California called LogicBlaze that James founded. And we provide support for Apache ActiveMQ, Apache Service Mix, and our own product that bundles those two with a whole bunch of other open source. The company's called LogicBlaze. But I'm one of the founders of Geronimo and have been here since the beginning, so I've been through the ups and the downs and the sideways. So.
And if you didn't catch it, he works for LogicBlaze.
Now, that was LogicBlaze, or was that LogicBlaze?
LogicBlaze.
There we go. Okay.
And guess who I work for? I work for LogicBlaze, too. My name's James Strachan. I was one of the founders of Geronimo as well. I work on a bunch of open source projects at Apache, ActiveMQ, ServiceMix, Geronimo. I mostly hack in Geronimo on the kernel. There's a new kernel called Xbean, which is really cool, and you should check it out. And on the messaging side and the ESP side.
And last but not least.
I'm David Jenks, and I do work for IBM. unlike these guys.
So I'm sensing a theme here. It's IBM and Logic Blaze and Logic Blaze and...
Chariot Solutions.
Yeah, and whatever, and IBM and IBM.
So I'm also one of the founding members of Geronimo, and I work on a lot of stuff, especially the transaction and connector framework and security, and I just spent the last 6 months or so working on improving some things in the kernel, which should make it a lot easier for us to get to Xbean, but Xbean also has to catch up in some ways, so... well, I don't know what else to say.
That's sufficient. We'll let you stop there. So I'm going to ask the first one, just to sort of start things off on the right foot. I'm a J2E developer. Why do I care about Geronimo? I mean, we had an open source J2E stack. We had one, if you like, very, very controversial figures. We certainly had Mark Fleury with the whole JBoss scenario. We also had a couple other ones. There was the folks who were originally responsible for Castor and the Open EJB, and it seems like Geronimo was kind of a late entry into the open source J2E stack. So why do I care?
Well, I guess I can start out and say one of the things that we as a team feel is that there's room left for innovation in the app server market, and some of the other products out there haven't been showing that as much lately. So one of the things we're really excited about in Geronimo 1.1 is our plugin framework, much like Eclipse and systems like that, which really allows you to bring in a lot of new functionality to Geronimo just kind of by clicking through a couple of dialogues or downloading a plugin from a website. Some of the things that J2E leaves out. So, we have a plugin right now for scheduling with Quartz, a plugin for LDAP via Apache Directory. We're going to be working on a Jasper Reports plugin soon. We have plugins for various sample applications. That's one of the new features that Geronimo has introduced in the app server space that I think is going to be pretty neat. So we're hoping a couple years from now, just like you say, I use Eclipse because of all these great plugins, you'll say, I use Geronimo because I can't live without all these great plugins. Why would I use anything else?
Well, you mentioned the notion of innovation, right? And typically innovation and standards don't necessarily crop up in the same sentence, and you're talking about building a J2E-compliant server, correct? So do you feel, I'm going to take this and spin it in a different direction for just a second. Do you think that the Java community process, the notion of J2E, the standards and so forth, inhibit some of the innovation that you guys want to do within the Geronimo server? Do you expect at some point that all of the innovation you will put in here would feed back into the J2E standards? Or is this just you're going to go off and do your own thing and see if the JCP follows?
Well, I think if you look at open source, there's a lot of implementations that have nothing to do with the JCP, but you find J2EE developers want to use things like Spring, right? And the JCP keeps an eye on what people are using and what they're picking up and using for their innovation, and eventually those things will become part of the standard if they feel there's critical mass. So it's not an issue of saying J2EE is not important, because it is, but J2EE is also not the end of the world, right? And it's not the quintessential end of programming. It's really one paradigm of which there's many others that we want to be able to facilitate. So Geronimo is really, as Aaron said, with the plugins, we want to be able to take the best of breed so that you can build the server that can meet your needs. So we're not just saying, here's a J2EE server, and that's all there is. So, and I think as far as the JCP goes, sometimes they're really slow. Sometimes they get it. And so I think we're basically trying to innovate on the edge and allow them the opportunity to pick up things that are interesting. Hopefully we'll be an early adopter of that.
And I guess I'd turn the question around a little and say, how many enterprise applications have you written that don't need a web framework, don't need a reporting system, don't need a scheduler? I mean, there's so many things that J2E just doesn't cover. You know, and that's the space that is left for us and for other people to innovate in. And we don't need to do everything ourselves. Like I said, I mean, a lot of our plugins integrate other open source projects where other people have innovated, and we can, you know, we can bring that into Geronimo and make it easy to work with those other products from Geronimo.
Well, that begs an interesting question, right? You brought up a bunch of things that J2E doesn't cover. Should it?
I don't know if J2EE should cover it, but there are certainly tools that developers need and developers want. Developers use them right now, you know, and that's the focus of things like the plugin framework. But, you know, one of the other innovations that's pretty big and kind of behind the scenes that's not necessarily prominent is the ability to create your own assembly of Geronimo. Not only do we have plugin architecture, but we use lots of different open source to put things together, so what we've done is kind of integrate everything together and provide a platform by which you can pull out what you don't need and slim down the server as much as you want. Now, doing that particular thing with many of the J2EE implementations that are out there, is it just simply can't be done. It's an all-or-nothing proposal. With Geronimo, that's not the case.
Or build up and start with a minimal
right.
Geronimo distribution and add features via plugins, even if you start with a web container only and add in JMS. So you started with something so small it's not J2E compliant, and then add some J2E features back in. So start with a web container, add JMS, forget about EJBs or whatever.
Right. So you can build from the top down by slimming down, or you can build from the bottom up by starting really, really slim and adding things onto it.
Okay, we had a question from the audience here.
Yeah, indeed. I'd like to ask, what puzzles me a bit is not on a technical level, but more on the open source approach. We had a great presentation this morning about open source development, but still I see so many people from IBM, and of course I know that there's a WebSphere. I'm still from the old age, maybe from the 1.0 version, where we could buy software and are not really into the open source model yet. So I remain puzzled both for a large and a small company like LogicBlade. How do you pick this up? How do you leverage your investment? And how do you actually turn this into whom? How do you monetize your efforts?
I think in general, software is becoming free. Right? People are stopping buying software as bits and bytes and CDs, and the idea of buying a CD for $100,000, which just has some bytes on it, is kind of going out the window. Increasingly, software is becoming a service business. So it's all about you pay for service, whether that service is training, consultancy, production support, mentoring, custom development, custom configuration. The software business is increasingly becoming a service business. So companies like IBM and LogicBlaze, our business model is increasingly services. I don't want to speak for IBM here, but certainly we, LogicBlaze, are a service-based business, and that's how we make our money.
Is that a good thing, though, the notion of moving away from software as a product into more of a notion of software as a service?
I don't know if it's necessarily, you know, a sweeping thing to move away from software as a product. I tend to take the belief that open source and commercial software are going to live together, and that there's room for both. Now, software as a service is certainly an up-and-coming thing, and it's becoming very prominent around the commodity-level software, right? Things that many, many, many people know how to do. You know, building containers, building, you know, a web framework, those kinds of things are commodity-level things. Now, something that, you know, is very specialized in a particular business scenario is still going to continue to be of value, I think, and something that people will purchase. So I tend to see two roads there. And I see software as a service continuing along and becoming larger, and commercial software continuing as it's always been.
So what draws the distinction between them? Where exactly do we stop calling it commodity and it starts becoming specialized?
I think that's up to the user to decide.
Well, and ideally, the open source would be the infrastructure and kind of raise the base level for everybody, and then the commercial product can keep building their specialties on top of that, whether it's vertical specialties or, you know, specific offerings oriented to particular large customers or whatever the case may be.
Right, but the reason that I say that it's up to the user to decide is that open source is most often composed of people who set out to develop the solution and users who need that solution. So they come together and they develop this thing together, right? It's not just a bunch of people sitting in a back room, a dark room, coding this stuff up. You know, open source needs users, and so the the melding of a user along with a developer, I think, is where a lot of the innovation comes from, and that's where the users are very important, is to decide what is going to be commodity and what is going to be commercial.
Okay, another question.
I heard you talking about the plugin framework, and you also mentioned Eclipse in the same sentence. And so my natural question is it based on OSDI?
No.
Why?
That's a lengthy answer.
That's a loaded
Dane's
question.
Dane's not here.
Why do you ask about it? Why should we bother about OSDI? You know, I don't know nothing. I know nothing about OSDI, so that's my question to you.
Right. So one of my favorite topics is kernels and stuff like that, and plugin frameworks, obviously. and I've been looking at, you know, how do you make kind of the perfect plugin framework? And from what I've seen from OSGI, and in particular the dependency and class loading models, it's really impressive. And I think they have managed to standardize or make some contracts about how to do that. And also not only, you know, get stuff up and running, but also how to manage versioning and redeployment and stuff like that.
In a way
that it doesn't, you know, break after you have your 1,000th plugin.
Okay, well, I guess I'm probably the most schizophrenic guy in the room because I used to work on commercial WebSphere. Now I'm working in open source. And so my head spins around at least twice a day trying to figure some of these things out. So what we call classic WebSphere is based on OSGI. And obviously IBM has an interest in Geronimo, but Geronimo's working on this thing called XBeam. And I think fundamentally what we have is we have the requirement, both in the commercial space as well as the open source space, to be able to have some kind of framework that you can take things and plug them together. Now, OSGI is a good specification, but like a lot of specifications, it lags behind. So what's interesting or state-of-the-art in open source is maybe a year or 2 years away in OSGI. And so in Geronimo, we're working on a thing called XBeam, and James can talk about it probably much more detail than I. But what XBeam really does is we looked at the OSGI spec, we looked at the requirements for open source, and OSGI really requires kind of a tighter integration between components. I think XBeam is more a defensive strategy. You know, we integrate Tomcat, we integrate OpenEJB, we integrate ActiveMQ, but all those are separate autonomous projects. And so XBeam took that into account in terms of its wiring framework as well. And so one of the things we would like to do is basically provide a bridge so that we can read OSGI metadata and plug those components into the XBeam framework, and then conversely take an XBeam component and generate an OSGI module. But we want to be able to innovate past where the current OSGI specification is, and so we've been really trying to get the best of both worlds. And I think, you know, Dane's been talking to the OSGI guys about some of the things that we're doing in XBeam, and what we're really trying to do is get some synergy between the two. So I think what you're going to see, this goes to the question about the standards earlier that Ted asked, you're going to see innovation happening early on, and then standards are going to pick it up and refine it and then make it a safe place to be. So you kind of have, if you look at the adoption curve, there's going to be some churn down at the bottom. But then as people start adopting it, as it gets refined, as it starts getting kind of standardized in terms of usage, those patterns then get codified into some kind of specification, which then makes it ubiquitously available. And I think XBeam and OSGI are really kind of going down that path. So the plugin framework doesn't specifically use OS or XBeam, but rather it takes packaging concepts that we have in Geronimo that allows you to do the plugging.
I was just going to say, so the quick answer, will we and do we support OSGI? Absolutely, we will support OSGI. Mm-hmm. Why are we not basing it on OSGI? It's really one of complexity, really, I think. You can do packaging in simpler ways than OSGI. This is nothing. There's nothing wrong with OSGI. It's very powerful. It does lots and lots of things. But we don't always need all of those things. For example, XBeam can use just a Maven POM, right? Almost every project in open source now uses Maven to build. So already the POM, the project object model, the little bit of XML, is in a repo already, and we can use that to do the plugins. We don't have to invent a whole new way of doing things just to plug things in. So we've taken a more simplistic, minimal approach to make it easier to plug things in XBeam. We can take any old Pojos, any jars, any project, and plug it in really, really easily. Plus, we can support OSGI and other other forms of deployment. So, I think the quick answer is more it's simpler to plug anything in. I mean, we basically want to allow any project which uses Maven to just drop right into Geronimo.
Well, I've got another short question, short answer to your question. It's all about resources, about your time. It's open source project. So we could ask about any other specification and ask if it could fit to Geronimo or not. And we could discuss it, and we would find some additional features that would make this product more beneficial. But, you know, it's all about time and about innovation. We could implement what's already available, but we could also, at the same time, innovate and try to figure out something brilliant, something new that's not yet covered by any spec. So we need to balance between following and innovating. That's how I see it. Well, there is a risk that innovation brings us to the point where innovation turns out to be proprietary software. Yeah, that's another issue. So we could try to discuss it, but it's all about people who are involved in the project. The more people is involved, the better product might become at the end. So well, I'd say if you are interested in OSGI, which James said will be available, I don't know.
Yeah, that's the next thing you're supposed to work on. Yeah, it's like,
please join us. You are more than welcome. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure that you will find Apache Geronimo a very interesting project. If it's not yet so interesting that you didn't join yet, make it interesting just by your joining up. So that's my...
In other words, it's the classic open source answer. If it doesn't have it, you just build it yourself.
Yeah.
Another question over here.
Hi, I just have a general question about the J2E market and the commercial vendors primarily. I don't see so many reasons why I would purchase a BEA server or an IBM WebSphere at the moment. Do you guys see any particular great value add that any of these products provide, and if not, where do you see these commercial app server providers going?
So in other words, please tell us everything that Geronimo doesn't do well.
Well, I mean, one advantage of the commercial products is often they have suites of products around them with add-ons and things like that. So, you know, if you have WebSphere, you can get, you know, MQ Integrator, or you can get their portal, or you can get, you know, all this other stuff, and that's one of the things we're trying to address by plugins. You know, we think you should be able to get a JetSpeed plugin to get your portal and a ServiceMix plugin to get your integration rather than having to have a vendor with a suite where you're then stuck with kind of all or nothing or whatever the case may be. So, you know, if the vendor has a tool, you know, that you really want to use and it just kind of just works with their app server, that may be a compelling reason to go with that vendor stack. You know, eventually we hope to have the same thing with Geronimo and its suite of plugins.
Just to Ted's question, I think the thing Geronimo's not great at is the high-end performance clustering stuff. So the stuff that WebSphere XD or the commercial version of WebLogic, it's the real high-end users. I think most commodity users, I mean, a lot of people are just happy with Tomcat, right, in the real world. A lot of low-end people don't need all this high-performance distributed state and failover and partitioning and so on and so forth. Now, we all are working in the open-source world to make Geronimo more competitive to things like WebSphere XD over time, but it's going to take us a little while to get there.
I was going to say, just from a difference perspective, I think the commercial packages probably appeal more to the guys that run the business, right, in the data center. If something breaks, they want to be able to get it fixed and apply it to a running server or to a cluster of servers. And you also have probably a better architected view of how all the pieces fit together. So in open source, you know, you pull in a LifeRay or a JetSpeed as your portal, and you have ActiveMQ, and when something breaks, okay, well, who am I going to call? I'm in production. So, well, let me send James a note, and maybe in his free time he can get to it. or, you know, I don't know, you guys probably have a service contract or something, but the point is you end up managing a lot of that yourself unless you're buying the whole package. And so I think the commercial servers still are very appealing to customers that have, you know, high availability requirements. And I think the commercial servers undergo a lot more rigorous testing. I think Tomcat does a really great job because they got such a great community around them. And, you know, JBoss, I think, does a good job because they've got a good community around them. We're building the community in Geronimo. You know, we're not quite there yet, so that's one deficiency that we have. But, again, I think the commercial servers kind of appeal to the guys that operate the business as opposed to guys that are developing the applications.
Yeah, I'd agree with most of what Matt says, but one of those things that is changing is support, service and support. There are a lot of companies who are stepping up to provide commercial-level support for Geronimo, and that's another big shift. Instead of going to a single vendor to get support, and that's the only vendor that you can go to for support on a particular piece of enterprise software, you've got a choice of people to go to, right, for a number of different reasons. You know, they might address a particular need that you have that, you know, another company doesn't. And so support and service offerings are not necessarily the winning reason to choose a commercial app server anymore. I think that Matt's probably right, though. Guys that run the business and whatnot tend to still think that way, that they want to go to somebody who not only provides the app server, but also the business add-ons on top of that, the commercial support, the professional service. You know, they want to go to one single place to get all that. And that's starting to change, but it's going to take some time.
Well, Bruce, you and I talked about this a little bit over breakfast, you know, the two of us yesterday, and I want to sort of expand that conversation to include the rest of the panel. One of the things that we talked about was sort of inhibiting factors that prevent corporate users, you know, the guys that you guys were just referring to, from adopting open source. And I'm sort of curious, and I guess what I'd like to do is just start from David and sort of go to the right. What do you think is the greatest inhibiting factor for open source within a commercial, production, corporate-style environment? And what can you do as committers to Geronimo to try to fix that? Not to put the pressure on David, but you're up.
I think I'm going to duck this question.
Well,
not dealing with people who are trying to decide whether to buy something.
One of the things I've seen more recently in being an impedance to open source adoption is quite literally budget, you know, and the structure of a budget. I've talked to many people whose business is structured around paying a lot of money to adopt a piece of software before you do anything with that software. And when you approach them with open source, they really don't understand, how do I just adopt this and then pay for services? You know, the majority of the cost goes to services. Well, it's a shift in the, you know, the buckets where the money come from. And I've found that a lot of businesses really have a difficult time understanding that. And I don't know what kind of a shift that, you know, needs to happen to cause that to change. But in speaking to a number of business people, you know, they have a very difficult time with that. So it causes me to think that maybe, you know, some influence in the way that budgeting process takes place needs to happen. But oftentimes that's out of our hands. You know, that doesn't have anything to do with the developers. It's at a level above us. And so, you know, what we're talking about is developer-level adoption. So I don't know how much that applies to this, but I've seen that recently, and I think that that's one of the hurdles to adoption.
I was just trying to think of a good answer for this question. I'm not terribly sure. I mean, right now today you can download WebSphere Community Edition from IBM and you can get support from IBM. So in terms of corporate adoption, IBM selling something is a pretty reasonable thing to go for. So in terms of there is a commercial vendor you can go to right now today. There's a couple of others, Covalent and various other people. So I don't see any particular, other than budgetary stuff, I don't see any impediment to why people can't adopt it at the grassroots open source level or the corporate level. I guess one... If you're a smallish company, IBM probably doesn't want to talk to you. So I guess for large companies, there's no barrier, but there's maybe a little market for smaller companies.
Well, I guess one of the things I'd add, and I'm not sure this is the top issue, but it just kind of the release process is a little different for open source than commercial. If you get, you know, a service pack for WebLogic or WebSphere, it's something you're going to be able to deploy a very incremental update. All your apps will stay deployed. All your resources will be just as they were, and you know, you may even be able to do that at runtime or at least with minimal downtime compared to, you know, Tomcat or JBoss. Traditionally, you have to reinstall the product and reapply your settings and everything. And that's yet another issue we're trying to address. You know, with our plugin architecture, we can distribute product updates as plugins. They can install at runtime without, you know, requiring a reboot to the server. You know, you'll be able to keep your applications and configurations deployed and running when you do when you apply an update. So
you can deploy plugins to a running server and then just point your other servers at one of those servers and pull the plugins from there. That's another big benefit.
Yeah, you can clone servers from developer to developer, so I can get everything set up, and you know, he could, the second developer on the project can just sit down, point his Geronimo to mine, and say, get that application, and it'll suck down the database pool and security realm and everything else it depends on. You know, so we're definitely trying to make some of that easier and try to eliminate some of those sources for downtime. You know, you could stage an application from your test box to your production box or whatever with, you know, on the fly at runtime. So that's something we're trying to do right now as developers to address this issue. I don't think we've fully solved it yet. Right now there's, you know, maybe 10% of the product that you can't replace at runtime, and then the other 90% you can, and, you know, we need to kind of lower that bar as much as possible. So there's work yet to be done, but we're trying to move in that direction.
Well, this raises an interesting question, sort of as a follow-up. One of the gentlemen over here to the left, wearing the JBoss shirt, but I won't mention that company by name, was asking how much of a conflict of interest, those of you working for IBM, do you have between supporting Geronimo and potentially supporting WebSphere, right? I know, Matt, you mentioned that, you know, you used to work on the commercial product and now you're full-time on Geronimo. And I mean, in some respects, not just from a personal perspective, but from a corporate perspective, how does IBM justify your salary when they've got a commercial development project as well? How does that fit into their, you know, play, if you will?
At least from an IBM perspective, okay, I'm going to tell you guys all a secret except the JBoss guy, right? So I can't tell anybody.
Okay, you got to cover your ears. There you go. Okay, he's not listening. La, 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 la.
You know, it's a tough thing, right? IBM could just simply, you know, stay the course, right? We're just going to keep pumping WebSphere. But, I mean, the reality is WebSphere is not the only game in town, right? You still have WebLogic and what, from a commercial standpoint, but WebSphere is not for everybody. So companies that have smaller types of environments don't need all the beastly big WebSphere and 12 CDs and all the stuff you get. And they want to be able to get something in. I think Aaron or Bruce made the comment from a revenue perspective. People don't want to invest $10,000 to buy the software to do a proof of concept, right? You want to be able to go download something, build your app, do the proof of concept, and then people say, wow, that's cool. Let's go ahead and implement it, right? And so from an IBM perspective, we want to be able to make things available to developers at a low cost. And, you know, of course, I think the WebSphere marketing team would like to think that everyone is then going to move up to WebSphere. I think there will probably be some people that will, and there will be some people that will be satisfied with a support offering based on CE. How do I reconcile the conflict? I think I see this as a kind of a new way for IBM. And we're still a little schizophrenic internally about it. It's kind of scary when you think about it. But I think everybody's realizing that what we're going to end up with at the end of the day is probably a hybrid product so that you can take things deployed on Geronimo, up through CE, up through into the big WAS, so there's not this big schism. So what we're really trying to do is meet people where they're at, because not everybody needs the same thing, and we want to give people choice.
Well, sort of to follow up on that, there was another question along those same lines.
I was wondering, as Geronimo is all about innovation, for the IBM folks inside Geronimo, is there a communication channel back to the WebSphere folks in IBM, so this innovation gets back to IBM in some way?
Working on how to do that. I think what we're actually going to have to do is dig a tunnel to get some things in. But we kind of have this idea, I mean, if we call it the utopian idea, where we can take things from Geronimo up through the stack into WebSphere, and then conversely take things out of WebSphere and then push them back down either out into Geronimo or CE. And that's ultimately where we want to get to. But it's not that easy because you have two different worlds, right? Webster is very structured, highly architected. You know, you got guys, 60 guys debating how they're going to do something so it fits across 12 product lines. It's very different in open source, right? It's about innovation, so you don't have, you'll find that, oh, I forgot about this, so I have to go back and re-engineer it. And I think that's the thing that we have a challenge trying to bridge. But we're going to get there. You know, we're committed to making this work.
Let me drive into the technical space a little bit for Geronimo because, you know, to be honest, David's looking kind of bored over there on the end. And since he just wants to talk about code, one of the things I know that some competitor's product has advertised as one of their strengths is the fact that, for example, JBoss is built on top of a JMX-based backbone, right? I haven't heard any such similar sort of phraseology from Geronimo. What do you guys, you know, do you have a particular object model backbone that you built everything on top of? We talked a little bit about OSGI. You say you don't support that. You will. What is your backbone? Why did you choose it? What advantages does it give you? If it is JMX, great. If it's something else, what was it and why?
James probably is going to want to say something too. But so we started out trying to build a JMX-based kernel and found that the JMX stuff pretty much got in our way and didn't seem like a very efficient or usable way to connect components. I really think that JMX works great for monitoring stuff and maybe telling things to turn on and off, but for actually wiring components together, I don't think it's a terribly efficient or effective solution. And we've been working since the beginning of Geronimo to figure out what to do. So, and we're now at about our third or fourth generation, and there's X-Bean, which is kind of the future. So we have a kernel. It's gone through many generations. At this point, it bears quite a bit of resemblance to OSGI in a lot of ways. Our class loader stuff is not quite as sophisticated as OSGI, but has a bunch of the same features. It needs to get a little better. And we have a very good dependency management system between collections of services. So essentially these plugins are, we also essentially call them modules. It's a bunch of services that you deploy or turn on or off as a unit. So our kernel manages both these modules or plugins and individual services within them and sets up the wiring between them. See, I'm not sure I'm actually answering the question here.
No, you're doing pretty good.
Yeah, the point is we do have a kernel. We didn't think that JMX really gave us what we needed in terms of wiring components together so that they could communicate with one another. And we've been working really hard since the beginning of Geronimo on figuring out the best way to write a kernel. And at the moment, my view on this is that the kernel you're running in shouldn't really matter, that what you want to do for the services that you're running in any kernel, OSGI, X-Bean, the Geronimo kernel, you want to really write your services so it doesn't matter what kind of container they're running in. And we think that we've figured out some, they seem sort of obvious in hindsight, principles for how to do this effectively in terms of using dependency injection. The principal ones I'd say are using dependency injection for everything, especially constructor dependency injection works really well. And the other one is really separating the wiring and the wiring together and assembly aspects from the runtime functionality. What we found in integrating all these other open source projects, Jetty, Tomcat, Axis, OpenEJB, is that when the project is built with a clean separation between configuration and assembly and functionality, if you have that, and especially if you have dependency injection, then it's really easy to put it in Geronimo, integrate it, wire things up the way we'd like to do it, wire them up the sort of native way, it works great. And I'm pretty sure that if it's built on these principles, you could easily put the thing in an OSGI-based container. Whereas if the project has mixed together configuration and assembly and startup and life cycle and runtime stuff, then it's extremely difficult to modify it and add more stuff to make it a J2E compliant or make it fit with anything else. So I hope that was coherent.
I mean, right now today, the kernel in Geronimo is called G-Bean, which is a little bit like M-Beans. So the kernel looks a little bit like JMX, but we just hit some of the kind of the JMX cruft that slows you down. The new X-Bean approach is actually to go even simpler and basically make the kernel invisible. You should be able to write any Pojo and just drop it in Geronimo and it deploys. I'm a big fan of Spring. I think Spring rocks. And for me, the beauty of Spring is the container's invisible. I think as we move forward, we just write business logic in Pojos or services as Pojos, drop them in the container, and the container or the middleware binds to your components, not the other way around. So one of the things that hopefully when we move to X-Bean, we'll be kind of hiding most of the container from the services. So generally, containers and kernels should be an invisible implementation detail that you just deploy your code into.
Let me ask you guys for just a second. I'm not being super familiar with Geronimo. Does it run Java 5 or is it still a 1.4 based code base?
It works on Java 5.
It works, but.
And so, from that perspective, if that's a requirement, you have to stay with 1.4. But other than that, you can use Java 5 without a problem. It's just not CTS certified. But I think a lot of people, that's not the critical thing in getting their project done.
So here's the question, I guess, that I'm leading up to, which is we have Java 6 coming around the corner, and, of course, they're talking about features for Dolphin, Java 7. From where you guys sit as implementers of a J2E server, are there particular features of Java 6, Java 7 that you really want to see adopted? One such feature that I'm aware of that was supposed to be in 5 that was supposed to go in 6 and looks like it won't is the isolates facility, which I imagine would make your life as a container implementer much simpler. Are there other features that you would like to, you know, ask the audience as a whole to lobby Sun to put into Java 6 that would make your life simpler or would make their life simpler as someone who's going to use this container?
I do lots of messaging, so my number one requirement is asynchronous I/O. I want asynchronous I/O to be in the JVM as soon as possible. It was meant to go in 5, and I don't know if it was Sun or whatnot. It kind of got pushed back a bit and pushed back and pushed back. But
this is different from the NIO package?
Yeah. This is one thing that .NET does really, really well. They do full asynchronous I/O where you can essentially let the operating system do the I/O, and it's asynchronous, and you just basically give chunks of byte buffers to the operating system, and it does the I/O for you and lets you know when it's completed. NIO is a completely different select-based I/O, which is different. So I really, really want asynchronous I/O. Plus, I'd actually like really good support for things like InfiniBand and RDMA and that kind of stuff.
Anybody else? None of you have features you really want to see in the next rev of Java. Come on. I got to believe there's at least one of you.
I like the features to support dynamic languages, but not to implement Geronimo with. Maybe to implement applications in Geronimo with. But
well, do you see
closures would rock? Having closures in the language.
Continuations.
Continuations. We can do continuations right now in Java. It's a bit icky and it's bytecode swizzling magic. There's a library called JavaFlow at Apache, which bytecode weaves your code to implement continuations. I like conceptually continuations a lot. I think for things like asynchronous processing, workflow, orchestration, the concept of continuations are awesome. The thing I'm not so convinced about yet is, are we ready to serialize threads? To do a continuation, this is a great topic, we could talk all day about this, but to do a continuation, you basically have to serialize a thread, which means going through all of those local variables on your stack frame and persisting them long term. Which means you've got to deal with things like, how do you serialize a database connection? Where did it come from? How does the VM know? So there's
these
some
are very
thorny
deep
issues
philosophical
in there.
Questions there, James.
It's a great bar conversation for later tonight, I think.
So James is now offering a boff in the bar on continuations, all those.
I'll second Aaron and say that I'd like to see dynamic language support. I came from the scripting world many years ago, and I'm really familiar with everything that the scripting world offers. So when Ruby came about and all the influence from Ruby, I kind of just said, I've been there, I've done that, I've seen it. But what would really be nice is to be able to implement applications in a dynamic language and be able to just deploy that right out and into something like Geronimo and have it run.
You know, it'd be really nice if one of the founders or one of the committers to Geronimo actually had some experience implementing a scripting language. That would be really groovy, don't you think? That would be
groovy.
That would be very
groovy. It would be, yeah. Very groovy.
That was twice I've been cut up. I'll apologize again. No, I was just going to say, isn't JSR 223 part of Java 6? So JSR 223, I think,
right,
is the right
number. Right, that's
the scripting
JSR,
language
right? Yeah, yeah.
Thing. And I think that, so now officially the JVM has a plugin for any scripting language.
Right, it does.
I think.
It does.
So there's kind of some support.
Well, and I guess one of the follow-up questions would be, do you see Geronimo approaching the idea of somebody building, you know, EJB services, whatnot, in these dynamic languages? Is that something you're explicitly seeking to support in a later rev? Can you do it now?
Yeah, I see the big win of scripting languages. You can do it right now using Service Mix. Quick advert here. So the big win for me with scripting languages, and one of the reasons I hacked up Groovy, was to be able to do glue code. Where a lot of the things we do in IT isn't writing business logic. It's kind of gluing little bits and pieces together, which is where the scripting languages really work. You've got to suck something from over here and transform it a little bit and send it over there. It's little scripts of stuff. It's like glue stuff. Firing up your Java IDE and writing reams of Java code just to do this little bit of glue is often a pain in the ass, really. So I think the big win for the scripting languages is for the kind of the duct tape type stuff of J2EE. And right now, a simple way of doing that is you drop your scripts into Service Mix, and that can deploy in Geronimo.
And I think environments like Ruby on Rails have a lot of advantages for even web development. I mean, my personal feeling is Ruby on Rails goes a little too far, and Java isn't far enough, and I'd like to meet in the middle. But I know there are people out there who would be, you know, Ruby fanatics.
Where is Bruce, by the way? Mr. Tate, where are you? Oh, I guess he left the room.
And there's Groovy on Rails. Grails is pretty cool stuff. It's worth checking out. It's really neat.
Okay. Well, we are just about out of time. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to give our panelists a large hand. And as is typical with Jerry Springer-type shows, moderator gets the last word. Remember, if anybody disagrees with anything these gentlemen have said up there, they're just wrong. Bye.